Welcome to the Closing Market Report. It's February the 2nd, 2007. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo of Risk Management Commodities Incorporated out of Lafayette, Indiana. And later in a half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Bruce Bostert. He's the manager of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois. In agricultural news, the House Science and Tech Committee may direct U.S. EPA to research biofuels, and USDA's Farm Bill proposal knocks the money out of the cotton producers' hands. We'll take a complete look at that a little bit later when Dave Dickey brings you the agricultural news. And don't forget that just after the bottom of the hour, we'll look at a very cold forecast for the Midwest. Steve Hilberg will join us from the Midwestern Regional Climate Center. It all happens on this Friday edition of AM 580's Closing Market Report.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn after corn specialists. Information on the web at agrigold.com or by contacting Regional Sales Manager Scott Williamson at 217-778-6485 for a representative nearest you.
Taking a look now at the numbers on this Friday afternoon from Chicago. March wheat up a penny at 461 and a quarter in the soft red pit. The May contract at 475 and three quarters, up 1 1/4. March corn futures at 402, up 4 cents for the day. The May contract up a nickel at 414 and three quarters. And July at 421 and a quarter, up 4 1/4. The September futures at 407.5, up 4.5. December futures at $3.97 1/4, up 4 3/4. March beans at 736 3/4 today, up 15 1/4. May futures up 15 cents at 752.5, and July at 765.5, up 14 3/4. November beans 15 3/4 higher at 789 3/4. March bean meal 212.70, up 4.80. The March bean oil at $30.37, up 79 cents, and from the Mercantile Exchange, feeder cattle finished 85 cents higher at 95.62.5. February's 91.05. They were up $1.22.5, and the live April cattle at 94.47.5 were up $1.57.1. February lean hog 62.5 cents higher at $65.35 a hundredweight. From the outside markets, crude oil up $1.70 at $59 even for the March contract, and the CRB at 301.29 is up 207. The Dow at 12,645 is now up just about, down 28 points for the afternoon.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Joining us now to take a look at the numbers from the Chicago Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange on a Friday afternoon is Mike Zuzulo of Risk Management Commodities Incorporated out of Lafayette, Indiana. Hi, Mike.
Hi, it's a busy Friday too, Todd.
Oh, man, really busy Friday. Fridays are always busy for me. I have lots of work to do here on campus on that day, and I missed something that was pretty good and pretty big, actually, in the marketplace. Why don't you go through the Pro Farmer front numbers for me, please?
Yeah, Pro Farmer came out here just a little bit ago with numbers that probably would have been just slightly before the close, and they might have been out a little bit earlier, but based upon Newswire numbers, corn acres, they're pegging up 10.9 to 11.8 million. That puts you in about an 89.2 to 90.1 million acres planted. That beats the recent farm futures numbers that you and Chuck talked about last week. Interesting part about this is they said about 7.5 roughly will come out of beans. The other 4 will come out of outside crops and other areas. But if you take 75.5 bean acres from last year, million, minus 77.5, then you're talking about 68 million planted bean acres is what Pro Farmer's coming up with when you run through the numbers. So that explains probably a lot of what happened today in the trade and why the sentiment in corn is a little bit more negative than the beans and why the speculators like the beans so much more. Obviously, the crude oil helped the beans out a lot, too, being up over 3%.
But I wasn't here to watch it during the day. Did the little jump up in the bean come at the end of the day after this was out, or were there some early indications maybe that was going to be the case?
Well, we had a technically firm day. I don't know about the indications on the Pro Farmer numbers, but technically it looked like the beans wanted to go ahead and try that January 18th high of about 732 and try and probe that by the end of this week sometime. But then middle of the day, it started to get revved up on mostly what we thought of as a crude oil turnaround. Soy oil was up 2.7% in the March contract, beans up 2% in the March contract, corn up only 1%. So it looked like the bean oil felt the crude. Why didn't the corn feel the crude? We suspect the wheat didn't really perform that well at all this week on some pretty decent news. And again, the sentiment in Chicago has seemed to change. It has changed since the State of the Union address, and some of these acreage numbers that have put out last week and again today kind of confirm this, that we've bought our corn acres. We don't need to take corn up any higher. What is there left to buy in corn for upside potential? And we think the market's missing one huge thing, and that is February is the month that farmers will make their financial decision on what to plant and how many more corn acres to put in because the crop insurance numbers are figured. So the market is trading some numbers. They may very well be valid, but they also may be getting ahead of themselves if the prices at the end of the month tell producers, don't plant as much corn, go ahead and stick with your rotation and stay with beans, because, shoot, November beans are stuck up there at $7.90 after today.
They're at $7.90, and we've got corn up in that $4 range. I could get used to reading corn numbers, by the way, with a 4 in front of it.
Wouldn't we all? Wouldn't that be great?
So really, the battle is on at this point for corn acres, and February is the month that this is going to all happen, and either... Well, we'll just see how it all plays out, I suppose. This is going to be a fun month to watch because by the time we get to the end of this month, farmers will be making some decisions about crop insurance. They'll make decisions about those final acres, and price will be the indicator, won't it?
It really will be. You know, we've got the financial numbers this month, and then obviously the practicality and the rubber hitting the road on April 15th. I talked to a good friend of mine that we were at basketball practice the other night, and he said, where are these markets gone? I said, I tell you, if I could find a meteorologist that could give me an accurate forecast on March 30th what the springtime planting weather is going to be, I think we could do fairly well in these markets, don't you? And we just kind of chuckled because he's in farming too. But I'm going to have to talk to Ed Kieser a lot more this year, I guess.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Aren't you going to just call Ed?
Just keep bothering Ed. Make him earn his money, right?
Well, yeah, I think he earns his money already. We'll have to see whether we can do something else for him. How about
that? He could say the same about me. Make Zuzla earn his money.
You betcha. Those forecasts are going to be pretty darned important. So, I guess if you're a farmer and you're looking at this, what is the indication, do you think, in this month when you might need to pull the trigger on one thing or the other, whether you're how far in the month do we have to have? How far in the month do you think we need to go with prices at high enough levels before you make that decision to plant corn?
It's a heck of a good, interesting question, because I'll tell you what we're going to do in the middle of this month. If November beans keep gaining on December corn, like the stochastics and some of the technicals say it can, even though the fundamentals would say, barring any weather problems in South America, it really shouldn't, but if it would happen to continue to do that, I think we're going to lean heavier and heavier and heavier towards a bearish surprise coming from USDA on the bean acres, and that you have factored in about the most bullish numbers as you practically can. And I mean really practically, as far as what farmers can handle on their operations. How many corn belt acres can we put into corn when we aren't going to buy new machinery and build a lot of new bins? There's a practicality issue that's coming when people are spouting almost 12 million more corn acres this year. That is an unbelievable number in my mind when we haven't been able to get above 84, 85 million acres for, 20 years now. So I think there's a practicality issue that as the Nov beans, if it would gain on Dease corn, I think we're going to ramp ourselves up and our clients up for a more likely scenario where the USDA gives us a bearish report for new crop bean prices.
And so that you're just thinking that there will be a lot more beans in the acres and the corn won't be there, at least not to the extent of certainly that Pro Farmer has announced today.
These meetings that we've been doing, and I suspect that a lot of the analysts that have been doing these meetings like us would agree with this, that farmers are very tempted to go after more corn, but they're not quite ready to break their pattern, and really push hard and give the market what it wants right now. And if the November beans continue to climb against December corn, I think the natural mindset that we picked up out there in the fields and in the meeting halls was, I'm not going to push myself one to one extreme or the other this year because prices are great for both. Why should I go down one extreme path and kill myself if one bad thing happens?
You know what? Do you have those Pro Farmer numbers in front of you? Did they give you a percentage increase? We could back figure it real fast, I suppose. But
well, we had 78.3 last year,
and they're at 12, so
and they're at 10.9 to 11.8. So we're talking about 89.2 to 90.1 million planted.
Yeah, so we're talking what, 12%? Is that right?
Huge.
Yeah,
yep, huge.
That's a bit, man. That's a big acreage.
You know that from your farming background and what your dad and your family does. That's a lot. When you're talking about asking guys in Illinois to go 12-15% more corn. And they've already been heavier corn anyway in their rotation. That's a lot to ask out of the Corn Belt.
I think it's a lot to ask out of. I think it's a lot to ask out of Iowa and Minnesota. But maybe I'm wrong. But they're heavier corn already. But boy, it seems to me that the Illinois producer might be able to go 10% pretty easily. And if the numbers we got while we were out on our corn and soybean classic series are right, then they are. I think it was a 9.7. Mm-hmm. The heaviest spot though, if I remember right, and I have to go, I think they were 12% in Moline. And there were, well, there were 200 people there, so there were probably 90, well, there were probably 100 farmers in that audience, I think, maybe a few more. And I think they were heavier corn already, but I'd have to go back and check that. But it sure looks like if you're getting that many acres that you've got to get it out of the northern Corn Belt.
And right, and it's fair to say now that if you want any more acres than you've already got guys thinking, you better keep Dease corn at a premium to Nove beans now. You better not go the other way, and I think that's where it goes back to everything we talked about at the panel meetings. If traders aren't going to sell Nove beans and sell the front-end bean complex as South America gets ramped up on harvesting,
mm-hmm.
I don't think it's likely at this point that they're going to sell corn either, that the corn really is probably a favorite of the trade still to this day. The bean speculators obviously love this market, and they should, and we're not fighting them one bit, but the corn market is not going to weaken on a bean rally, in our view.
Okay, so then if we really think this is the case, so how far, the question then, I'm going to ask this question again a different way, about how far do we go into February before you do something, and not about acreage this time, but how far do we get into February before you decide to make new crop sales for soybeans?
Oh, I think our strategy has always been to be almost 100% hedged in 07 by March 1, especially if we can climb over $8. And then we can always buy a 15-cent call to give us some protection for a weather market or a South American problem. But if I think the bottom line for me, when I talk to the guys out on the road and when we talk to the branch offices, once farmers see $8 Nove beans against $4 Dease corn, then they'll probably start moving back towards their normal rotation and not pushing so hard on corn. So we're going to try and market that way.
Okay. What about the livestock side? What do you see there?
Well, big numbers today on the semiannual cattle report. The mm-hmm. steers, 500 pounds and over, 102%. That was bigger than the trade thought. Beef replacement heifers, 500 pounds and over, 100%. Bigger than the trade thought. Negative probably October-December futures, since they'll be about market ready then. We also have a PERS-like virus over in China that the Chinese have come out and said has ended up killing millions of hogs over there. That's something we really want to keep an eye on here the next few weeks.
Oh, yeah, that could put a big run in the market for hogs for sure.
And maybe, possibly shut down some of the feed demand over there too.
Yeah, well, that's the case, which means they might have the ability to export corn.
Well, that's something, and the meal, you know, the bean imports, we noticed export sales this week were 26% China bought of our total exports. They usually have been buying 40 to 50, so nothing big right now, but it's something to keep track of.
Okay, anything else before I let you go for the day?
That'll do it, sir. Have a great weekend.
Yeah, thank you much.
You bet.
Great talking with you. That's Mike Zuzlo, Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana. We really like to talk with him on Friday afternoons. I hope you like to listen to what he has to say, too. If you do, you can always hear it again if you want at WILLAG.org.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Bunge North America in Danville. Bunge recognizes the importance of agricultural production to our society and economy and the role producers and processors play in providing food and feed to the world.
Taking a look at what the forecast is from our own Mike Sola for tonight. He says partly to mostly cloudy skies, areas of light snow likely in northern and central sections after midnight. Lows will range from 0 in northwestern Illinois to 16 in the far south. Mike says tomorrow in the south, mostly sunny skies, elsewhere partly to mostly cloudy, some scattered flurries. Highs tomorrow from 2 in northwestern Illinois to 31 in southern Indiana. We'll take a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast, by the way, at the bottom of the hour, especially for the Midwest, when we talk with Steve Hilberg of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center. The extended forecast for the weekend, dangerously cold temperatures and wind chill factors will remain entrenched into next week. Livestock operations will have to monitor those animals for stress as wind chill values drop to below 25 below zero at times early next week. Dave Dickey's here now with a complete look at today's agricultural news.
In agricultural news, the House Science and Technology Committee has approved a bill that would direct the EPA to undertake research to make biofuels more compatible with the nation's existing oil-based fuel infrastructure. The law would require EPA to identify chemical additives that could lessen the corrosive effects of biofuels. The bill would authorize $10 million for the effort. Under USDA's Farm Bill proposal introduced Wednesday, cotton would be the big loser under a new marketing loan program. USDA projects average loan rates for cotton would fall more than 12% during 2008 to 2012. Steve Verrett is Executive Vice President for Plains Cotton Growers.
While we don't necessarily agree with the proposals they have for setting of those loan rates, and we still want to look very closely at the revenue replacement for countercyclical, the fact that those tenets of the 2002 Farm Bill are there, we're very much pleased to see. And so, you know, the devil certainly will be in the details, but we like to see that at least.
By comparison, corn would see an average market loan rate reduction of 3.1% and soybeans less than 2%. Rice would see no cut. Meanwhile, reaction to the bill continues. House Agriculture Committee Chairman Colin Peterson says the Bush administration bill was better than expected.
I think it's a good effort that will provide us some input that we will definitely take into consideration. So we look forward to working with the Secretary and the administration, as well as Mr. Harkin, and we will, as we put the Farm Bill together, take the best of their proposals and marry them up with the best of other proposals to come up with the optimum Farm Bill.
And Senate Agriculture Committee Chairman Tom Harkin says, and this is a quote, "There are some bold proposals and there are some I like. It is not dead on arrival." But Harkin also acknowledged the bill would require tweaking.
"I'm going to give serious attention to the department's proposals. I think there are some good ideas in there. I have questions about other areas. I'm especially concerned about putting even more money in the old freedom to farm type of direct payments. We need to change course in this country. Now, this proposal tends to start moving us in a new direction, and I'm happy about that. But I think it needs a little bit of fine-tuning, and that's what we intend to do here in the Congress."
Illinois Senator Dick Durbin wants to take a hard look at USDA's call for use of adjusted gross income to limit direct payments. USDA has proposed producers with AGIs over $200,000 should not receive direct subsidy payments. The current cap is $2.5 million. Durbin says it's an interesting concept, but
that may not be the best number to use. That adjusted gross income doesn't reflect the real cost of farming, because there could be an awful lot of things that come off of that gross before you get to the real income the farmer realizes.
USDA Secretary Mike Johanns has touted the Farm Bill proposal in Mississippi, Iowa, and California. Today, he'll be in Tennessee. Energy experts told the Senate Energy and Natural Resources Committee Thursday that subsidies should focus less on corn-based ethanol and more on the development of cutting-edge technologies like cellulosic ethanol. Energy experts also recommended that subsidies for both fossil and renewable fuels be tied directly to market prices of oil. And South Korea and the U.S. will hold beef talks next week to discuss Seoul's rejection of American beef shipments for containing banned bone fragments. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey, of course, your Director of Agricultural Programming here at the WILL radio stations. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week, inviting you to visit our website at willag.org. That's willag.org.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from First Midwest Bank, serving the banking needs of Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Kathy Ferguson and Morris at 815-941-3751. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, and equal housing lender.
Well, in just a moment, Bruce Bostert, who's the manager of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois, should join us to take a look at the cash grain segment for this Friday afternoon. Just another quick reminder that if you'd like to visit our website and download some MP3 files, please do that. It's at willag.org. Bruce Bostert should be now on the line with us. Good afternoon to you, Bruce.
Good afternoon. Happy Groundhog Day.
It is a happy Groundhog Day, and Punxsutawney Phil, I think, told us that we're going to have an early spring this morning. So
that works for me.
Well, boy, it's going to be cold this weekend, though. I wish he would have given us a little warm air instead of the early spring, maybe, at this point. But we'll see how that all goes. So let me talk to you a little bit about this cash grain market as we get up in these areas where corn really hasn't ever traded too often, especially December new crop corn, never in this $4 range. Not quite there today, but has been there in the past couple of weeks. How is the basis holding up at this point? And then is demand slacking off in any place that you can see?
I would say so far, looking on the corn side, new crop basis levels have been hanging in there. A lot of the numbers right now are just kind of paper numbers. Corn's being bought and being hedged. It's not a very liquid cash market when you're getting out that far. So people are just looking at taking the crop and putting it away right now. Cash movement, old crop has been relatively quiet this week. I would say we're seeing scale-up sellers on new crop. We're running into, it gets out there when you're buying these new crop numbers, starts to get to be a question on just financing the hedges. You don't have warehouse receipts to stand against it, so you're financing that out of working capital. So that could get to be interesting at these kind of cash levels.
So that's one thing you have to worry about. What are farmers needing to worry about at these levels?
Right now, I guess the problem is what type of a plan they have scaling into it. Wanting to figure out their marketing plan and where they pull the trigger on it, but also not getting too carried away on things. As we, you don't want to get there and say, oops, I've got 105% of production sold.
We talked a bit earlier with Mike Zuzulo about the month of February and this being the month where the crop insurance numbers would be set, and we're wondering just how far into the month of February we really need to go before a farmer can look at that and make some accurate decisions about how many acres of corn he would plant according to the crop insurance coverage. Have you discussed that with anybody at this point?
And I'm not an expert on that myself, but my understanding is by the tail end of the month, they should have a pretty good handle on what those numbers would be.
Yeah, it should be. We'll take it up with Gary Schnitke, who's the ag economist here on campus that ramps those numbers through the FarmDoc website. People can go there and get a good idea, actually, of what their crop insurance payments might be or premiums might be if they want it. www.farmdoc.uiuc.edu. What are your bids for the day?
We are at 387 at Paxton on nearby corn, 376 for new crop. Beans, 710 nearby, and 765 new crop.
Bruce, we'll talk to you again next Friday.
Thank you.
Bruce Bostert is the manager of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois. In about 2 minutes, we'll take a look at the agricultural weather forecast with Steve Hilberg. Your regional newscast comes up right now.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. A spokesman for the NCAA says it's not surprised but not concerned about a proposed bill that would revoke the organization's tax-exempt status in Illinois. State Representative Chapin Rosa Muhammad says the NCAA has overstepped its authority by barring the University of Illinois from hosting postseason tournament play because of its continuing use of Chief Illiniwek. Rose proposes taxing the NCAA 10% of its earnings and sending the money to Illinois universities. NCAA spokesman Bob Williams contends the state has no ability to affect federal tax-exempt status. Police in Champaign are clearing away a disabled semi-truck that's blocking a portion of North Prospect Avenue. Police are asking people to avoid the area of North Prospect and Bloomington Road until the truck and a separated trailer are moved away. Indiana State Police and local police departments plan to kick off a statewide Super Bowl Sunday blitz. They'll concentrate on safety belt enforcement and child restraint violations. State police say they'll have a zero-tolerance policy for child restraints and seat belt violations. Lawmakers in Illinois are increasingly setting their sights on putting a stop to online hunting. State Representative Dan Reitz of Steelville has proposed banning such hunting in Illinois, saying such ready-aim-click kills, or the prospect of them online, push the ethical envelope and violate the spirit of fair chase hunts. The advent of technology that enables people to stalk and kill their real-life prey online as alarmed hunters and lawmakers intend on preemptively blocking the practice. About 24 states already have outlawed the method, which the Humane Society calls pay-per-view slaughter. The issue emerged in early 2005 when a Texas entrepreneur set up a website that allowed subscribing hunters to shoot antelope, wild pigs, and other game on his 220-acre spread from anywhere in the world. Indiana University's demolition of a dilapidated fraternity house where composer Hoagie Carmichael once performed has prompted a bill aimed at giving preservationists greater power. A bill sponsored by Representative Matt Pierce would give local preservation commissions in Indiana the power to at least slow down the destruction of historic structures by state colleges and universities. The bill would allow local commissions to designate as historic properties that are owned or leased by educational institutions, forcing hearings before the buildings are torn down. Last April, IU tore down the Kappa Sigma fraternity house, where the composer of Stardust entertained in the 1930s. IU said the building was too dilapidated to save. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
Support for today's broadcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing. Strategic Farm Marketing is now holding a series of risk management seminars throughout Illinois and Indiana. Information on seminar dates and locations is available at sfarmmarketing.com or 800-383-0046.
Joining us now to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast for the Midwest. Not a lot growing. Nothing growing in these kinds of temperatures. It's going to get darn cold, isn't it, Steve Hilberg at the Midwestern Regional Climate Center?
Yeah, it is, Todd. It's sort of odd here that it's so cold yet so brown, but it is going to be very cold. We'll see our coldest weather of the season, and in fact, probably in some places, it hasn't been this cold in a couple of winters this weekend, and I think over much of northern and central Illinois, we'll see temperatures dropping to zero and below.
Zero and below. Who's going to be the coldest?
The coldest will be up in northern Illinois. There's actually some snow cover up in the far northern part of the state, about anywhere from 3 to 6 inches across the northern tier of counties. So where there is deeper snow cover, they will likely have the colder weather by Monday morning. And if we get enough of a dusting from these snow showers and light snow areas that move through here over the weekend, it could help temperatures drop here a few more degrees as well. But definitely the northern portions of both Illinois and Indiana will be the coldest.
And usually when it gets this cold, there's nothing moving. But this time around, there will be some serious wind chills.
Yeah, we've got a lot of wind, and it's not atypical with a cold Arctic outbreak to have a couple of days of very strong winds. And wind chill factor will definitely be something to consider tonight and during the day tomorrow and tomorrow night. Wind should start to die off on Sunday as the high pressure center of high pressure moves over us, and that will cause winds to diminish probably beginning around midday Sunday. So tomorrow looks like to be the worst in terms of the wind. Right now it looks like our coldest weather will occur perhaps Sunday morning and then again Monday morning.
Is it going to stick around through the week?
Yeah, pretty much so. There will be some moderation toward the end of the week, but then it looks like following that there could be another shot of cold air, maybe not quite this cold, but we're not out of the cold air weather pattern over the next week to 10 days. So while there will be some moderation, it will stay cold.
And we appreciate you being with us for
the All right,
day.
Todd.
Thanks much. And Steve Hilberg is the Director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, located at the Illinois State Water Survey right here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. That is today's closing market report. Remember to tune in tomorrow morning at 11:30 a.m. for Commodity Week. And if you just can't wait, you can always pick it up off our website. We'll get it posted by about 6 o'clock this evening. It's at willag.org. That's willag.org. On behalf of your Director of Agricultural Programming here at the two radio stations, AM and FM, and the TV station as well, Dave Dickey, I'm Todd Gleason, the host of those two programs, Commodity Week and the Closing Market Report. Wishing you a good weekend. Stay safe over the Super Bowl. Stay warm. Take care of the pets and the livestock.